everyone, to I Got You podcast. My name is Renee, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Keisha and Heather. Today, we have some amazing guests. We have Janae Dupree, we have Grace Bramwell, as well as Tammy Jackson. Also joining us, our special guests, we have Dr. Adrian A. Gentry. He's a speaker, coach, and an investor. We also are joined by Pastor Wesley Johnson. He's pastor and founder of a church in Connecticut. He's also a founder of the J6 Enterprises LLC, which is an education and social impact consulting, coaching, and training company. And last and certainly not least, we also have Pastor Danny Newton, who is a writer. He's also a pastor and founder of a church in North Carolina. And today our topic is Christianity and confronting difficult topics like sex and sexuality. So let's just get right in. And this is to everyone. Please feel free to jump in at any given point in time to give your point of view. Okay, so first question. Do you think the church has fostered an environment where Christians and non-Christians alike can have difficult discussions pertaining to topics like drug abuse, sex, and sexuality, and should the church even foster that environment? Anyone? Any of the pastors want to tackle that?
Can I jump in real quick?
Please, bro.
And I would love to address it from a different standpoint, because I know it sounds good that, okay, the church is the people, and the people is really where we're supposed to be. It sounds great. It sounds fantastic. And I think that's the church answer, right? But the reality is this, is we're steeped in tradition, right? Sex has always been a taboo issue inside of church. Sex, drugs, addiction. We don't really want to talk about those things. So what we tend to do is under the rug. So I look at church as what it's supposed to be, it's in the original state. And I look at Jesus when he did, yes, go out to meet the people where they are, right? Yeah. And I've seen that. That's what church should look like, right? But he was educating people. And education means dialogue. And it's very hard in the church when you have a pastor standing up front to educate with true dialogue, dalgami, right? In the original Hebrew text. So church has really made it one of those things that's taboo when we don't talk about. Right? Sex is not one of those things that I've been to church, many churches, and they've sat back and educated the people on sex or drug abuse, right? It's more condemning. If you do this, you'll go to hell. I look back at Baptist churches, and we're all African-American, so we pull from Baptists, we pull from Pentecostal churches, our traditions, and it's preached many times that way. And in that Pentecostal church, that Baptist church, you're going to hell for everything. I don't care what you do, right? So if I still hold on to some of that in my preaching, when I step on stage, I have to hold back some of these things that may offend my congregation. At the end of the day, it's about numbers. I'm not a pastor. I just coach a couple of them. So I was sitting back, and I was talking to a pastor down here in Jacksonville. I'm reading one of his books now. The proper way to eat a peach, and yes, peach is what he's talking about in this book, and he's talking about oral sex. He's talking about using sex as a ministry within your marriage. And I was really on this because he's gotten a lot of criticism on this book. However, he is talking from a place of truth,
yeah,
of how to use sex as a ministry inside of your marriage. And I have never seen that level of honesty and truth. It's hard for me to even read the book because it's like my uncle talking about having sex with my auntie or something. It's crazy. But it's real. And I think, I don't know either or of you pastors at all. So anything I say, just understand I'm coming from the totality of church, not from what I know you guys do at all. So please don't take it.
I was going to say, I love the energy. I love the question. I think everything is contextual, including ministry. So I think there's a danger in painting with a broad brush, but I do think things have a historical context. And I will be honest, I think historically, the church has not done a very good job in trying to create spaces to have these kinds of conversations. But I also think the church, while it's been very taboo regarding sex and sexuality, I also think one of its strongest arms historically, whether we're in the South up north and in the Midwest has always been some kind of outreach surrounding addiction. And so like any institution, the church is multifaceted. I would say as church is trying to catch up with culture, statistics suggest that culture evolves every 4 to 5 years, but the church evolves every 15. And so we're always playing where the culture is. But I would say in this virtual space that we're all operating in now, probably more than ever, I think the church has been forced to self-examine, to self-reflect, and also begin to try to answer some questions that it has been afraid or either uncomfortable in addressing. And I think some of this we have to view in terms of our historical context. We have to view in terms of our historical lens. I don't want to get into a theological diatribe or some ecclesiastical conversation, but we have to look at the context in which we view our theology. And I think that has informed how we view these subject matters. But I do think, to your question, I think the church has, some churches do it better than others. They've provided space to have these kind of conversations. But I do think the intent of the church is to be an institution, not only of salvation, but of goodwill. And we have to learn how to do that better.
Interesting. Thank you.
I think that I am, I'm kind of in the place where I have to go and I have to look at who's leading and what their background is in coming up and how they handled it coming up. Most of the time, how you handle it came up, how you taught coming up is how you want to handle it with your people now. For an example, you know, I was preached to, all I heard about sex is fornication. It's wrong to have fornication. It's wrong to have fornication. It's wrong. And I heard it so much, it was like, wow, I want to try this because everybody's talking about it. If they talk about it every time I say it, then this must be some good stuff. And I'm just going to be straight up with you.
Exactly.
I think that where we kind of miss the point is, and I understand, is dialogue. You know, because to be honest with you, sex was made. It's good, and it was made to be good. But I think how we, glory to God, thank you. Hallelujah. How we deal with it is to maybe we should deal with it from you laying down with someone, you're tying your soul to, or you're laying down with someone who if you lay with this person, lie with this person, that person lie with 10 other people. So maybe where the church need to come from is to teach either the benefits and the non-benefits of being prepared maturely. And I don't think that, I think today more than ever, depending on where we are as far as your strict holiness, I'm talking about, you know, strict holiness, until where we are non-denominal, I think that's where the discussion has to come, and that bridge has to be built, where we help those churches who are struggling with these conversations.
So the second question I have is, so the question is, I've heard people say that the Christian community does not accept the gay lifestyle, yet it will accept a gay person leading a choir, etc. What do you say to the notion of, if you don't accept my lifestyle, then you should not accept my talent either? Anyone
want to
tackle that?
I'll step out there. I would say I think it's been a traditional view that the church has held, but I think that view is evolving as our understanding of sexuality evolves. I would certainly say it was and remains hypocritical if you're going to hire someone, same-sex loving or same-gender loving person, but condemn them in your preaching. I would certainly say that is hypocritical, for sure. But I do think the church's understanding of sexuality is evolving. And those conversations are being had in some very unique spaces, particularly in a predominantly African-American setting. Their conversation starting to take place around same-gender loving relationships and homosexuality and those kind of things. And so I think it's a healthy conversation that the church is beginning to have as pastors are becoming more trained, as they're becoming more educated, as they're studying biology and the science of the human body and the human mind. And so I do think those conversations are evolving. Wherever you land, I think it's healthy that the conversations are evolving.
Awesome.
That's
anybody question. Else want to tackle that question?
I guess I have a follow-up question, and it goes to what's the saying is that, but what is acceptance, though, right? We use the word acceptance and the church being accepting of the gay community. But I also think it's like, you know, I accept you, it's your lifestyle. And I just see the discussions up here, so I'm just kind of putting it out there, right? I accept it, the fact that this is the way you are because maybe science points to you have no other choice, right? But at the same time, you know, is it accepted in the Bible? Is the church accepting it because of the science and the evolving? Or are they saying at the same time, like, well, you can come in, but the Bible says X. And I don't know enough to tell you, but I haven't read the Bible enough to the point to know what it says on that issue. So I'm not going to pretend that I do know. I guess it's just more of a question. Do we accept enough to say that it's heterosexuality, homosexuals, gay people can get married as well, and it's also sanctioned in the church? You know, so I guess the level, I think the question of what does really acceptance mean, does it mean, because I do have friends of mine, they're like, yeah, you know, they say you can come into a church no problem and stuff, but they don't think we should be married, or they think that there's still something wrong with it. Like, I'm just wondering, where are we moving towards in terms of the acceptance level?
I don't think we can say where we're moving. I think there are some churches who are fully open to same gender loving relationships. They're preaching from the pulpit. They're marrying, and so I think churches are all across the spectrum. I will say that I think at the end of the day, wherever you land on this, love wins. And I think trumps, and I think our greater call and responsibility as people of faith is to love, right? Yep. We don't always have to agree. We can agree to disagree. We can hold different theological perspectives. But the overriding thing is it going back to Genesis that we were all created in the image and likeness of God. And so if we start with that place, then I think love always wins, and it allows us to be able to engage in healthy relationships, whether there is some theological nuance. Right? I think what the church has done a very bad job, and I can be a critic of the church because I love it, and the church has done a very bad job in loving, right? I think the church has been born historically what it's against, not necessarily what it's for.
Right. Right.
So those things that we are against, we stand up and we wave the flag about what we're against. But rarely do we understand what the church is for. I think the command was love your neighbor. The greatest command is what? To love your neighbor as yourself and to love God with all your heart. And so those are the two greatest commands. And so I think if we recognize that love wins, I think what the theological perspective or position is, we get an opportunity to honor the message of the gospel at its core.
Awesome.
I definitely think that if the church has evolved, I stopped going to church, just full disclosure, I stopped going to church for a few years. And I just returned to the church because of the community that I found. Because I didn't like the fact that I felt the church that I was going to, I was raised Catholic, was just very closed-minded and judgmental, and I felt that I just had a priest that was at the pulpit that would just, like, archaic preach to me, and there was no community. So I left the church for quite a few years until I found my recent church, where, talking about outreach, there, you know, the pastor does preach, he talks about, we had a whole series on love, sex, and rock and roll for a whole, like, month. And we have community outreach groups, and we have subgroups within the church as well that tackle different topics, like sex and drugs, like sexuality, like finance, like different showing and really, including all types of people. So I just wanted to hear from your perspective. And that's kind of why I returned to the church, because I found a home where I felt that it was more accepting of people.
I also think that the church has a long way to go. I mean, Pastor Johnson said, love wins, but I think it's still a long way to go, because when we spoke to the LGBT community, they had a problem with acceptance. You know, they didn't want to go to church, because as soon as they step into the church, all they hear is, we don't like, and you're keeping a lot of people out of church by saying that, even preaching about it. I don't know if necessarily preaching a whole sermon about it is necessary. You know, we're talking about we want to foster an environment of inclusivity. Like, we need to stop that. And I think the church doesn't do a good job. And yes, I agree that they've come a long way, but there's still a long way to go, I think.
I would go ahead, Doc.
What were you going to say, Adrian?
No. I think it's a real battle between those two principles, right? The thought process of acceptance, right? I can accept something, I can accept you and love you, but I don't necessarily love the sin, right? And we can't change the word to make someone else feel better. That's that sugarcoating. So if I'm going to preach that adultery is the sin, I also have to preach the other part, right? So if you're walking into a church and you're saying, I don't like it, I don't feel accepted because they're preaching that message, how many of y'all went out to the club, partied all night, came in, and the pastor said something? You were like, oh, my God. I feel horrible. He was talking directly to me. Well,
I guess
it's wrong. Right. You get what I'm saying? I don't care. You like men, women. It doesn't matter to me. That's just how I am. However, we have to be honest and say this is a sin.
Right.
So the acceptance is not from necessarily has to come from the church. It has to come from that person.
And that's to your point, Doc. To your point, Doc.
Rejected.
I would say to your point, Doc. I think again, every organization, every entity has a code of ethics, has a standard, has a belief system, and a value system operate on, whether you agree with that or not, on your job, in your family, the like. It's interesting to me that whenever it comes to the church, they are being asked to alter their value system.
Absolutely.
Their belief system. And so, again, that's why I say it's very important to recognize at the end of the day, love wins. Because I should have the right to speak, not necessarily against, but speak about something, to teach about something that I believe is true, and it not necessarily be offensive to you. I think you have to be very careful of this term, tolerable. Because when it becomes tolerable, it's really become, when I disagree with you, you are intolerable. And so now the church becomes handcuffed about the conversations that it can have, because if I have this conversation, I'm being intolerable. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have to be very careful. That's a slippery slope that not just pastors, but believers in the faith have to be careful in allowing themselves to be entrapped in. Again, I think we can respectfully agree to disagree. We can have theological differences, but it does not mean that there's no love.
Right.
We have to be very careful when those who disagree with the church's position use extreme examples to then say the church.
So then that goes back to the whole thing of acceptance, right? That's like the loaded word, right? We love, we welcome, right? And it's Keisha's point is that, and one of the things that Dr. Gentry brought up is that, well, wait a minute, if you're an adulterer, I can accept you, I can love you, I can welcome you, but I'm going to point out your sin, right? I'm hoping I'm not misquoting, and please let me know if I am. What a person, and I'm not saying this is my belief or not, right? I'm just putting out, what a person who is a homosexual or gay person could say, listen to me. It is different when you're pointing it out, because as a gay person, I am telling you that it is not a choice that I make to go down a wrong path. This is the argument that could be made. Versus as an adulterer, I am married. My marriage is sanctified under God, right? I'm married to my husband. Is that the, you know, but if I choose to step out in my marriage, that is a path, and that's the wrong path I take, right? That's the, as an adulterer. However, a person who's gay saying, listen to me, I'm not making a choice to step out of heterosexuality. This is innately who I am. But then again, we can make this another argument that says, okay, well, you know what, is it a person who is, are we then saying that that person who is gay is mentally ill and they cannot help themselves, but we still welcome them? So I mean, I'm just putting it out there. These are arguments that are, you know, that are made. So I don't know if we can say, if we take it from the sample, that it's the same thing as, you know, pointing out a sin, unless we see innately, if we're studying biology, that the person who is gay is still a sinner, even though it's something that they're born with.
Well, I would say, and then I'm going to jump out of this conversation, I would say, typically, Dr. probably know better than I do, your initial premise, right? And so I think your starting point informs almost ultimately where you're going to end up. So again, I think we can have healthy conversations, agree to disagree, because then, my belief system is now being boxed in. I have family that are same gender loving, right? So that's what it is. That's whether that's their choice or whether they ascribe to, this is how I've been wired and built. This is how I've been formed. Again, I'm not here to argue that. That's their position.
Mm-hmm.
That's family. Those are friends, and I love them. But please don't tell me that because you're saying that this is the way that I am, that this is the science of this, that somehow my perspective is wrong, because I believe that this book that I'm ascribing my life to says that that might not be the best. And so I think that's what we end up in. It's like, you disagree with me that I believe that this is a science and this is the way that I am. And so because you disagree with me, you hate me.
Right.
Or you're not.
Yeah.
I think that is wrong. And I don't think that's healthy. And so now, faith, whatever their perspective is on sexuality, they find themselves tiptoeing on eggshells around same gym because
T-shirt and I talk about that all the time.
And I think that's unfair.
Another question we had was the promotion of self-love is very popular today, and sometimes a part of that is the act of masturbation. What do you say to the practice of masturbation and or body exploration?
You guys go ahead.
Anybody can
say that?
Can join in with that question.
Who said it? Go ahead.
Yeah. Dr. Gentry? I mean, Dr. Gentry, do you have a point on that?
Everyone's like,
question. You said, what do we think about it?
Yeah.
At what point are we promoting it, though? Like, I'm considered a liberal, but I also think that we need to slow down a little bit, too. You know what I mean? I heard stories about talking to little kids about, you know, you can go ahead and, I'm liberal, I'm like all love and everything, but we need to take it down a couple of notches as well. I am not promoting that type. That's not the only type of self-love there is. So let's focus on things that are going to self-love for our minds, for our spirituality. I'm not a hater of sex. I love it too.
Demora, can I ask you something?
You gotta slow down,
Do you have kids?
I have two.
So, do you see them at a young age touching themselves?
Well, you want to know, I'll tell you something. I have not. My son is now 14 years old. If he knew, he's upstairs locked in his room. But I have just let him started locking his door because I'm just like, okay, you can lock your door. I understand probably at this age, there's probably some exploring going on. I'm hoping he's doing it by himself as opposed to somebody else right now. So, you're not ready. You're not ready. We have those talks. We have those conversations. He has it with his dad, too. I'm a little bit more of a talker. So, I don't know if I would promote necessarily that type of self-love with my kids or my or my teenage, it's not something that I would introduce. I could have a discussion with them if they want to talk about the different types of, like, you know, what masturbation is and what sex is. But I don't know if I would. Why is it called self love?
And I truthfully and honestly hate this.
Self gratification, maybe. Is that
Adrian?
Right, and truthfully, I hate that statement. I don't like new fads. Let me just say that. So that word is completely arbitrary. It means nothing. Someone said it one day and hashtagged it, and now everybody
is
right. So now it's like, oh, got my nails done. Self love. You know what I'm saying? Wash my face. Self love. It means absolutely nothing, and I don't like it because it's a fad. Correct?
Right.
I think you spoke well when you were saying this, Ms. Jackson, about, okay, self-love is truthfully identifying you. Let's read some. Let's build our spirits. Let's understand who we are, right? Now, look back at the word masturbation. You have to start thinking about, where is it stemming from? As a child, it may be you going out and trying to find yourself. You know, you have a lot of hormones driving. That's what that may be as a child. So one of the organizations that I kind of sponsor and help out is it's called Reclaim, and they deal with sexual childhood abuse, right? Healing women and men from sexual childhood abuse. So a lot of times you have to start saying, okay, is masturbation actually coming from me being traumatized as a child? So now we're in a place of healing. So now you have to heal that spot. Second, is that masturbation causing you to sin in another way? I look at Paul. Paul said, all things are good, but all things may not good for you. Right? It may not be right for you to be doing this. So is it causing you to sin in another way? So being single is one thing, but is it causing you to lust after someone? Is it causing you to want to fulfill that empty place more, to actually go out to have sex? And I don't think it's just masturbation. Sometimes we're still stuck in a childhood state, and we do that because we haven't progressed. Sometimes we're using masturbation as a way to cope, as a coping mechanism. So we have to really get to the root of what it is, right? It may not just be, I want to explore myself. So this self-love notion really has to go back to the forefront, the beginning, to understand where these feelings and emotions are coming from. When did it begin? That's what I think self-love is more than anything. You can talk about getting your nails done. You can talk about getting your hair cut. You can talk about masturbation, self-exploration. But where is the root of it all stemming from?
Yeah, I think.
But
what
is the root?
Go ahead, masturbating.
Oh. Like, why are we... I think we're overthinking it a little bit sometimes. And
yep.
When you say self-love, I mean, it's kind of taking care of your own self, your own needs. I don't think it has to necessarily stem from something other than just what it is, masturbation, and talking about it with your children, or it's not necessarily a bad thing, in my opinion. I mean, it could just,
I just don't
be
know
what it is.
Yeah, I just think masturbation is masturbation, right? That's what the only thing I brought up is, like, maybe it's just a term that's coined self-love. I just think of self-love as something a little bit bigger.
Okay.
That's why I said self-love versus self-gratification. I don't necessarily think self-gratification is bad. I mean, like, it's our sexuality, how we feel and what we do. What I'm talking about is the introduction is, and I guess I brought children into it, right, is at what point do you have that discussion? Because we know that children some do, explore, right? And if I find out my kid is doing that, I'm not going to shame them about it. It's just not something I'm going to necessarily go like, oh, baby, go self-love, you know, go masculinity. I'm just saying, if I'm going to teach my child self-love, it's not going to stem and start from masturbation. That's all I'm saying. But I'm not going to shame you if you start to explore your body. My conversation with you is, what do you feel about that? Why is that, you know, open discussion, right?
Right.
I don't believe in shaming. Definitely this child's shaming. And for grown people who do, I mean, listen, if you have certain sexual needs, I'd rather you self-gratify. I won't say self-love. Self-gratify. I don't know if that's a word. Well, you know, gratify yourself as opposed to going out there and maybe doing it with that wrong person or something. That we are sexual beings. We are sexual humans, right? I mean, we have needs, we have urges, they're okay. It's just about being really smart with it, being positive with it, and that's all. I don't know if I would just say that's, that was the only thing I was bringing up.
My, what's your opinion on that? Is,
go ahead, Janae.
Oh, I was going to say, I think the conversation needs to be had, especially with children. I don't feel masturbation is a form of purity. So I'm definitely not promoting it, or and I'm against it. I am. And I think self-love is more feeding your spirit, feeding your mind. That's feeding your heart with the word of God from a spiritual perspective.
Right. And I have to look at it like...
To comment on the, I was just listening, you know, to everyone perspective, and what's her name? Jamel?
What's Janae?
Yes, hearing from here. Yeah. That really we are a spiritual being, and so we have the body, we have our spirit, and we have our soul, right? Body, you know, is what get all our feelings and emotions, you know, tied up. But we know the topic came up in self-love and masturbation, and immediately kind of went towards the growing up of exploring yourself. So it's, I think it's apples and orange, in essence, because self-love is, you know, what's your, can't see what's your name is, that really spoke last. Really, you know, knowing who you are, you know, as a person, taking care of yourself, not the needs in the terms of masturbation as it was presented, but it's really, you know, knowing that you're spiritual, are you taking care of your spiritual needs as well? You know, that's self-love, you know? Uh-huh. Are you communicating with God? Because I think one of the most important thing is having that open communication with God, and all your needs are met through Him. And one of the things that we should be teaching our children is, like, you know, prayerfully seeking God in terms of when our emotions are out of whack. In terms of masturbation, is part of your emotion, you know, your body reacting to certain things. So, and you want to satisfy that need. You know, it's just like you feeling hungry, you know, you feel those sexual desires. So it's a physical thing, you know, versus, you know, just taking care of yourself spiritually and, you know, naturally. So that's my perspective. So
I would say that, one, I think this is a, we're in a hyper-sexual culture.
Yeah.
Define a lot by sex, and we've narrowed that to physical interaction, and so rarely do we discuss sexuality. We lean heavy on the act itself. So I think, one, we're a highly sexual culture, but two, I like Tamara, I believe it is, I love the distinction between self-gratifying and exploration. I think kids tend to explore. And I'm certainly generalizing here now, but I think kids tend to explore, adults tend to self-gratify, right? Very clear on their actions and their reasons why. And to Doc's point, I also think that oftentimes our sexual acts is a result of our socialization, the experiences that we had. And so as adults, oftentimes if we'll find ourselves doing that, and again, I'm not labeling it because I don't think the Bible, there is no explicit claim that masturbation in and of itself is a sin, right? So let me just be clear. The Bible doesn't explicitly address that. But to Doc's point, while some things might be lawful, doesn't necessarily mean it's expedient, right? And so just kind of understanding that, I think, is really important. But then lastly, I think the Bible, again, has not done a good job in talking about sexuality and sex. And so we find ourselves having these kind of conversations because it's been so taboo for so long. And so even when we have them, we don't know how to have them in a healthy way. And again, I think it's also important to understand historical context. The closest thing we have to this conversation in the Bible is Genesis 38. And it's a warped interpretation. That's Onan. Judah had a son,
couple of sons. His eldest son was named Ur. Ur was considered evil. He died. And then, according to that culture, the next brother was supposed to marry the wife. Economic reasons to make sure she's covered, and also for shame. And so Onan did just that. He married her, but there's a scientific term. It's actually Latin in its interpretation. I can't pronounce the word. But in American terms, in the English, it means pulling out. And that's essentially what Onan did. He pulled out and spilled his semen on the ground. Consequently, he was considered cursed, and he died. So I don't know how we make that leap, but when you in theological circles and in seminaries and in Bible college, that is the go-to passage to discuss masturbation, which doesn't fit at all. So again, unhealthy conversations around sex and sexuality, and we misplace scripture to interpret our position. But again, I don't think it is explicitly a sin because the Bible doesn't address it. But I do think we have to explore the reasons why we're doing it. And I think kids probably have a better interpretation of why they're doing it, even though they don't have the language, because it's their hormone. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we have a few minutes left. So let us go on to the next question. And I think this one is very important. Do you think that the church has done a great job in addressing the challenges of the younger generation? For example, issues of materialism, sex, 24-hour social networking, etc. What do you think, Janae?
Well, as a millennial, absolutely not. I feel like everything that I've learned, I've had to learn it by myself and making the mistakes myself. So I've learned through mistakes and experiences rather than me being taught on the biblical principles on how to, start a business or whatever it might be. So my answer to that is absolutely no.
Anybody else?
Wow.
You know, that question is pretty deep, right? And I think it's really hard to address all of this, inside of the church, to be honest with you. I've seen a lot of churches make a lot of leaps and bounds, and they've been investing into their teen programs and trying to empower their teens to teach teens, as we should. Iron sharpens iron. You have a younger adult who's actually ministering to the younger kids. I think in past, you know, that's definitely something that the church, I don't think they had the wherewithal to do so. At all. I don't think the finances, the resources, we're dealing with a different breed of church now. We're dealing with art ministries. We're dealing with non-denominational. We're dealing with so many different facets of church, and it's moving so fast that I think they're stepping up to that. I do believe that. However, I don't think it's been addressed in the past. And these things that we're speaking to, you have to realize it can only be spoken to by someone near their age. You know what I mean? Or someone that's really in that culture. You can't, you know, I can't think of a 50-year-old pastor to talk about, to talk about social networking. It just doesn't fit, right? But I think now we're starting, there, churches are starting to see that there is a demographic that has been untouched for a long time, right? Because I remember growing up, you sat with your mama in church, you shut up, whatever the pastor preached, they preached, and you walked out the door. I didn't understand this, thous, and those. Like, what are y'all talking about, right? But now they're actually speaking their language. So I believe it's definitely moving towards that direction. However, it takes time. And I think, you know, Pastor Johnson, I admire these guys, right? And I might say certain things against the church, or, you know, everyone has an opinion. Everyone's seen certain things and done certain things. But I admire what they have to go through when you're literally over an entire church and trying to move every piece and touch everyone where they need to be touched or meet them where they need to be met. That's hard. Right, like that's really hard. You know, it's like I can't talk to the pastor. Pastor's got to talk to 1,000 more people. You can't be the first one he talked to all the time. So I do applaud the churches who are moving in that direction and building that ministry around teenagers and saying, okay, let's help you move forward. You know what I mean? Let's teach you and train you for your next steps in Christianity, for your next steps in adulthood. I applaud these guys because they're really trying, but that's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah. I would say, man, to your point, the obvious answer is probably no. But to Doc's point, I do think, man, how we do church is changing and shifting at a rapid rate. I do think the old model of church as the institution, and that's a much larger conversation, is an institutional movement. That's a whole other conversation. But for what it's worth, it is institutionalized now. And as an institution, it's trying to catch up with culture. Pastors were historically trained to prove that they were as intellectually sound and stable as any other professional field. And so Masters of Divinity degrees is the spiritual equivalent of a law degree. It's that kind of rigorous study because they wanted to prove that intellectually they were capable, right? And so you were not necessarily taught necessarily how to lead, how necessarily to develop or equip. You were taught to preach and to pastor. And so now we're looking at some of our seminaries and Christian institutions around the country. They are organizational leadership degrees. There are strategic development degrees. There are degrees in practical theology and not just preaching, because the church is recognizing that while it is an organism, it is also an organization. And so it's trying to make sure that it is reaching a broad section of people. And some churches have done a very good job in developing business incubators and buying shopping malls. And even that, they're getting criticism. Look at all that money they you know, so you're darned if you do, darned if you don't.
Right.
But there are churches that are really trying to be what I would consider being Christ in culture, right? And trying to influence culture and being a part of where it's going and how it's moving. And so I think Dr. Henry Blackaby said, we want to enjoin God with where he is already at work. And so I think we're moving and how it's moving. And so I think it's important for us to be able to do that and recognize. And pastors are now becoming old. And so they have to, we're getting ready to hire an executive minister because I am clear on what my gifts, talents, and abilities are. And so while I think big, broad, and wide, I recognize where rubber meets the road and the nuts and bolts. I am a limitation and a hindrance to my church. Because while my ideas might be great, we're never going to get there because that's not the way I think. But to hire an executive minister who has a unique call to pastor, to teach, and to shepherd, but also is organizationally gifted, becomes a great hire for us, right? If we're going to step into where culture and society is moving. And so I do think the church has a long way to go, we can say. But I do think, to Doc's point, I think we are moving in a great direction.
All right. So we have about 5 minutes left. So quickly, what is the one thing that you think the church has done right? I'm going to give everybody a shot at that. Because I know the church has done many things right, right? But it appears this discussion was bashing the church. If you were not, this is just open dialogue that we think everybody needs to have, right? So with that said, what is the one thing that you think the church has done well at? So we can start with Janae.
Well, I can only speak for my church home. I feel what my church has done right is teaching how to apply the word. So what is being taught is not from experience, but it's biblical and it's taught in a way where I'm able to apply it to my life. So yeah, that's my response to what I think my church is doing right.
Anybody else?
I think that the church, for me, what the church has done right is to provide a support system, at least for me, when I was going through some difficult times, was always a church sister or brother there to help. I think the church provides that support system, and it's much appreciated. So I think I talk that the church may not be accepted at sometimes, but they sure are there to support you in times of need.
Okay.
And I guess going to what Janae was saying too, I can only speak to my church, and I think because the church, and that you touched on that as a movement as well, and different churches and different communities are, I mean, hopefully going towards the same path, but at different points of the spectrum of getting there, right? But for me, and I think it's a church that I've been in right now, is teaching me to have a relationship with God. It's the relationship that I'm building and fostering that, as opposed to just, I want to say it's my religion. You know, I was raised Catholic and everything. So now it's more, at least I feel like it's opening that bridge for me to say, listen, I have a direct link to God where I can have a relationship with him. So that, at least in my church, has been a huge message, where it's just that, you know, that's the foundation of everything that you want to do. What's your relationship with God? Start there, and wherever you want to build from there, that's where that's where the success is going to go. So a lot of people just say that, you know, I reach the top and then I tumble, right? But where was your foundation? If you have, like, just a, you know, a not a strong foundation, then it's going to tumble. So that, learning that, and really having that message being brought to me, that was something that was really important to me, at least especially for these past couple of years.
Awesome. Dr. Gentry?
You know, it's just funny. It was the first time I've ever been asked that question. And my brain is literally going 100 miles an hour. I think Janae, you're in a fantastic church, right? That's actually application. Ms. Jackson, I think you're in a fantastic church that's actually teaching how to have a relationship with Christ. As a church whole, I cannot say that's what I've seen. I think the church, really, one thing is expiring, I would say, hope. I think in totality, the church has always inspired hope. You have your motivational preachers that, you know, everything, let's get out of the church, you know what I mean? For, you know, a couple of days, that's why you got Wednesday Bible study, because you're going to need some more hope motivation on Wednesday. because as soon as you step out, you're going to feel all the problems. But I think I love the fact that, at least I can say, you two guys, that that's what church, I believe, ultimately should be, right? The application of Bible, right? How do I live this today in my life? You know, going out to this like Jesus did, meeting people where they are. How do I have a relationship with God versus have a relationship with pastors and priests? I think ultimately that's what church should be. But I can only think as a whole in general is hope. Because every time, it doesn't matter if you got $1 million or you broke, if you're going through a problem and you're a Christian, you can walk into a church.
Awesome. Quickly, we have 1 minute left. What you
got to
say?
A culmination of everything that everyone has already said. It teaches, it develops, it equips, it functions as an institution of hope. And I would lastly say, with all of her ups and downs, with all of her flaws and foibles, the church, particularly the Black church, has been consistent in serving people and loving people.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yay. Well, thank you guys so much. This was, I enjoyed this conversation. I think this is a conversation we should have more of, and conversation that we should explore difficult things as it relates to the church and society at large, because oftentimes we are afraid to even approach our pastors regarding these type of topics. So thank you guys so much. I appreciate your time, and we'll be in touch. Thank you so much.
Have a good morning. Is anybody on social media? We could follow you, and so you can know when.
Yeah.
What's your
My Instagram is I am West J.
West J. Okay.
And there you can get all of our social media platforms on that page.
All right. Thank you, Dr. J. Gentry.
Dr. Adrian A. Gentry, Facebook and Instagram. Dr. Adrian A. Gentry.